Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network.
Hey, are you hungry? Well, you're in luck. Meat and Three is back for season 16. I'm Taylor Early, and we've got a whole new batch of reporters I am so excited to introduce you to.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Fisher.
Asha McElroy.
Sam Girardi.
Jessica Gingrich.
Hannah from Wisconsin.
I'm a swing dancing audio engineer.
I am a future registered dietitian nutritionist.
I'm from New York, and I love rice and beans.
My favorite food of all time is a shrimp burrito.
I love watermelon.
We've also got a bonus podcast for you called Behind the Internship. Three of our reporters will take you along to show how they develop stories for this very show, Meat and Three.
Hi, I'm Danielle Flitter, a plant-based chef from Philadelphia, living in Mexico City.
I'm Sophia Hooper. I'm a bartender based in Portland, Maine.
My name is Addison Austin Liu. I am a chef and food journalist from Salt Lake City, Utah, and my favorite food is Peruvian.
Rice and beans.
Hand-drawn noodle soup.
So tune in to enjoy a square meal for your ears. And I hope you saved a little room for dessert.
I'm Lou Bank.
And I'm Greg Benson.
And this is an ad for Ancestral Agave Syrup, the critically acclaimed award-winning syrup that helps gringo bartenders better make margaritas, Negronis,
Lou, hold up,
old
are you just
fashions?
This is how you start your podcast.
What?
It's not an ad for Ancestral Agave Syrup.
Well, of course it is. I'm just cutting costs by not paying writers to make something new. I'm just using an old script.
You pay writers?
That's some kind of jab?
No, I'm just saying
What are you saying?
Well, look, we've got this amazing syrup that's made in an ancestral manner, cooked down from the sap of the agave, harvested the way these families would to make pulque. It's a quality product. It deserves a quality presentation.
Yeah, okay, hang on. Ancestral agave syrup is made by real families following traditional methods. Unlike the industrial Blue Weber syrup you get everywhere else, Ancestral is cooked down from agua miel harvested from Salmiana in Hidalgo, Mexico. It is the grade A Vermont maple to the sticky diner syrup you've been using for your cocktails. Ingredients matter, both in how your cocktail tastes and how you treat the earth. Ancestral is better for both. Is that good?
Sure. Or maybe confusing instead of cheesy. Look, just visit ancestralagave.com to learn more and to order your world-class agave syrup today.
And we'll call that a wrap. Catch you next ad, Greg.
Hasta pronto?
Ancestral Agave Syrup, available online at ancestralagave.org and wherever Greg and Lou were able to coerce store owners into carrying it.
I'm Lou Bank.
I'm Sergio Garnier.
And this is Agave Road Trip, the critically acclaimed, award-winning podcast that helps Gring X bartenders better understand agave spirits in rural Mexico. Sergio?
Yes?
I want to talk with you about biodiversity. Now,
I love that.
I know you do. And normally when I talk biodiversity, like particularly on this podcast, it's about the plants, right? And sometimes it's about the insects, and occasionally we'll talk about bats, right?
Okay, that's very specific.
Very specific, right? But biodiversity is so much bigger than that. You know, recently, maybe not recently, because it takes me so long to get to episodes sometimes, but within the last 2 years, I received an email from the guys at, I'm going to butcher the name, your Spanish is much better than mine, at Alma de Jaguar.
Alma de Jaguar?
Yeah, tequila, right?
Okay.
Thank you. That was really good.
I'm good at Spanish.
You are very good at Spanish. So they reached out to me wanting to talk about a project that they do, right? And the project that, let me back up, right? So the brand is owned or was founded by a guy named Rick Williams. No, I'm sorry, by a guy named Macaulay Williams. And he is the nephew of Rick Williams. Rick is the founder of this project called the Northern Jaguar Project. And so in essence, his nephew has this tequila company. I don't know, honestly, if he started the tequila company as a fundraising mechanism for the project, or if he just, started it and recognized, I need to do something to give back to Mexico, and my uncle's doing this really cool thing. But it's a really cool thing. So
it sounds like a cool thing.
Yeah. And the piece about it, I've kind of felt this about bats, particularly after COVID, right? Where there's this creature that we're scared of in general, become more scared of it when we think maybe it's the thing that created a virus, right? And yet, we need to protect it. And then you think about jaguars, right?
Definitely in the cooler list, they will appear on top of bats, I think. But I think bats are super cool.
Bats are super cool. Jaguar is super cool. But, I think the point to this is whether we're scared of a creature or whether we think it's not a cool creature, what's an animal that's not cool? How do you feel? Pigeons.
Yeah, especially here.
Yeah.
In where I live, pigeons are like a plague. Yeah.
Yeah, everybody hates pigeons, right?
Okay.
But pigeons play a role. And so what's my point? My point is, everything
mosquitoes.
Needs to be... I'm sorry?
Mosquitoes.
Mosquitoes play a role. We need to protect mosquitoes.
I hate those guys.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, who likes mosquitoes? Bats. Bats like mosquitoes. So anyway, I want to play a quote from you. We're going to run two quotes this episode from Rick, the founder of the Northern Jaguar Project. The first quote I want to run is just about the concept in general. So... take it away, Rick.
All wildlife in Mexico belongs to the people. It does not belong to the landowner. It is a federal ownership of all wildlife. And it's a great law. It's has a lack of enforcement because they don't have near the game wardens that we do. But we have a project with ranchers. They sign and agree to not harm wildlife, and we pay them premiums, prize money, for every photo that they get of a cat. It's called Living with Cats, Viviendo con Felinos, and we pay 5,000 pesos for a jaguar and less for an ocelot and even less for a puma and less for a bobcat. And we put the cameras out strategically in the best locations because this is part of our study. This triples the amount of land that we're studying and protecting. We have a reserve of 56,000 acres, but we also have 170 or 80,000 under this program.
Okay, so what I find fascinating about this is you've got a law in place that basically makes it illegal to harm wildlife,
but enforcement is a key part.
Yeah,
we have another conversation we had. Enforcement is a key part, and money, because money talks.
Right, right, and that's in fact what they're doing. Right, they're using money over enforcement. They're using the carrot instead of the stick. Right,
I think that's great.
Yeah, but what I find absolutely fascinating about this is here's this about the tequila company itself is here is this thing that we think of as a party drink. I mean, you and I don't. Well, maybe you and I do. But the people who are like tequila geeks who might be listening to this podcast certainly don't. And yet, and here it is playing this pivotal role in preserving jaguars.
It is awesome. And I think it's something is happening in the spirits world. Well, in a lot of consumer products. but you are having party, you're having a great time, you are spending money. And at least in the agave world, I'm seeing a lot of how, like, some drinkers will take their decisions based on this kind of stuff, like your environmental responsibility, social responsibility. So I think it's great. And it's also a great way to improve sales, don't you think?
Well, I wish I could say yes, right?
Instead, like, of doing pants ads, you know, or those like dancing, like hey, the one I
hey,
show you.
Hey, don't badmouth the pants. Look, I wish I could. If you look at the surveys always show that everybody, every consumer would prefer to purchase goods that don't harm the environment, that benefit the environment. That's what all of the surveys show. And yet, if we look at what sells, there's not a one-to-one correlation.
I think with niche products, that could be different, a little bit different. If you're spending you can buy, I don't know, a $25 tequila bottle, or you can buy a $200 tequila bottle. If you are buying a $200 tequila bottle, you will like to know more about. Or if you are buying $200 tequila bottles,
is the kind of tequila you right like? Into my trap. Yeah, keep going. The $200 bottle. Which one is that?
Well, depends. Well, I'm not saying any brand.
Oh, is that Casa Dragones?
I'm not saying any brand.
Well, I am. So Casa Dragones is the $200 tequila bottle.
Is that expensive now? Wow.
Oh, well, actually, I don't buy tequila, but my understanding is that it's the most expensive standard, like you've got limited releases, but standard tequila on the market in the U.S. I believe it is $200 a bottle.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know.
Okay.
I don't buy tequila.
But nobody is asking the question, what are you doing to improve Mexico of Casa Dragones?
There are different reasons to buy a bottle.
And there are different consumers making different decisions.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think that's what I like. And you're talking, you know, I want to take this to the mezcal drinker. The mezcal drinker, I think, is a different animal. I don't know about tequila drinkers, but mezcal drinkers, the ones I've been hanging out with, they want to know what's behind that product, that brand, where the agave is being sourced, what they're doing to the environment, to the community, where they produce. Not all of them, but I've seen it at least in, let's say, expensive mezcales, some of them.
But
the ones I've been hanging want to know that.
I think, Sergio, that you might be in a unique position. God, I'm taking that negative point of view again, but I'm going with it. I'm going deep with it. But, you know, I think you're in a unique position that you've got a mezcal brand, Ultramundo, right, that does all of those things. And so I think people are showing up at your events, are coming to meet you, are sending you messages because that's what they care about. But I still think that that's a tiny, tiny little piece of the market. Now, you know, don't get me wrong.
The mezcal I produce goes for a tiny, tiny piece of the market. I do very few liters. Mm-hmm. That's another. How many liters? Do you have any idea how many liters, let's say, Casa Dragones? I have no idea. Maybe you will know. How many liters they do compared to Alma de Jaguar?
No, not a clue. But I think it's safe.
So it's a very different category. It's a very different kind of drinker. I think so.
What do you mean? It's a who's the it there? What do you mean?
The person that decides to buy Casa Dragones and the reasons why they buy it is mm-hmm. a very different person.
Oh,
that buys Alma de Jaguar and has different reasons to buy Alma de Jaguar.
Look,
since you brought that.
Yeah, like look, let's be honest.
And there's
right?
very
like,
few people that mm-hmm. buys Alma de Jaguar and a lot of people that buys Casa de Dragones. You know,
right? And
so with niche products, you can maybe extend this more.
Yeah,
right.
Though. Okay, so you know, I run this. You've heard of this nonprofit I run, Sacred. So you know, one of the things that helped us grow our capacity to help improve quality of life in the rural Mexican communities where they make heritage agave spirits, right? One of the things is that a handful of people in the market, in the beverage alcohol market, started asking the question of tequila brands and mezcal brands, what are you doing to support the communities from which you source your spirits, right?
Yes.
Now, the people who started asking that question, while it was a very small number, were pivotal people. It was the people who were making decisions about what bars, restaurants, and liquor stores were going to carry. And so while the broader market, I would argue, you know, even though in the surveys they say, oh, I want to have the choice to buy the product that's good for the environment. And yet they're going and they're drinking their Coca-Cola and they're right. And their Tecate beers. Like they're still just absolutely strip mining the environment with their purchasing choices. They're sort of in this one specific category in a small way, starting to be forced to make a decision of something good without even realizing it.
Having the option, I think, is key there, you mentioned. So these projects, and then I relate, and I don't know if you wanted to talk about this, but we have something similar with the desert tortoise, a critically endangered species that grows in the environment where our agave grows.
And also just as dangerous as the jaguar.
Yeah. They say they bite really bad.
Do they really?
Yeah, I heard
they
that.
They sneak up on you at night when you're sleeping and they tear camping. Your nose off?
I don't know, but if they get their mouth in your finger, I think you can lose it.
Ooh. Okay, so don't be putting your finger in the wild desert tortoise's mouth.
And if they do, it's your fault, definitely.
Yeah. But you know, I love that, right? I love that we're seeing more of this. You know, you've got your project, you're helping the tortoises, you've got these guys helping the jaguars. Like, I want to see more and more of this. And the question becomes, like, is it working, right?
I will let you know and let's say what happens in the next 2 to 5 years. But I think you mentioned the opinion leaders, the guys making the decisions for the bars. I think those guys are really concerned, or at least in my experience with the interviews I've had. And then they are pivotal to influence more people. Yeah. And actually put the message out there and then let them decide. But at least having the information, I think is a great way, or a great start. I don't know at which point we are now, but I think it's definitely, let's hope it moves more towards that direction.
Yeah, no, 100% that. But I'll tell you, in a way, I think it's beneficial even beyond that. And what I mean is, when that beverage director says, I'm going to put this bottle of Alma de Jaguar or Ultramundo on my back bar, Maybe the bartender, you know, somebody sits down and says, I'd like to have a cocktail, please. Could you make me a margarita? Sure. What tequila would you like it with? Well, what tequilas do you have that help protect the environment? Like, I just don't think that's happening that frequently. But what I do believe is they're going to look on that back bar and they're going to see your beautiful label. Whether they recognize that the tortoise is on there because you're protecting the tortoise or not, I don't know. Same thing with Alma de Jaguar, right? Like, they might not understand that they're helping the environment, but the decision has been sort of narrow cast for them, that they have a bunch of options, but half of them are going to be beneficial to the environment, to other communities, whether they recognize it or not.
Totally agree. It's at least they have the choice. And then I think that's a great beginning, because the guy who really understood this, that is responsible for the agave program, put that in front of the face of the consumer. And then maybe it could read in the back, for example, Ultramundo, if you read in the back of the label, you can find out a little bit of the tortoise or sort, but at least it is there. So I think that's great. That's a great start.
Yeah. But, you know, something that you had said earlier in the podcast is coming to mind now, too. And I'm not sure how exactly this translates to consumers and consumer behavior. But, you know, we were talking about carrot and stick, and the regulations and just shutting people down doesn't always get you the result that you want. Where if you just tell them no, but if you give them incentives, and, you know, like in this case, right?
That's genius, and that's much more efficient.
I think so. So let me run this second quote that I wanted to run from Rick Williams, the founder of the Northern Jaguar Project.
You know, we're still studying the effects of our project. We feel, and I think there is some evidence, that the population has increased a little bit. We feel very sure that it's not going down, that we are protecting them. And, you know, one of the things that got me into this, one of the thoughts I had was, you know, these cats have been living over there for millennia, And they're kind of holding their own even when we got there. But technology is the enemy. Just the fact that I was driving up the highway one time and I saw a guy on a motorcycle with a big chainsaw strapped to his back told me that technology was the enemy of these cats, because instead of cutting wood with axes and machetes, these people are now starting to cut things with chainsaws. These people are going to have four-wheelers. They were just coming in to the community when I started this. And so it was easy to see that there was going to be a threat, even though these jaguars had been there for a long time. If the people do not understand that they need to conserve them, then we will lose them.
So for me, what that quote speaks to is you give people incentives, they're going to find ways to work toward the preservation of the biodiversity, of the animals, even the animals that we're scared of the plants that we need.
Even if they don't care about the animals or the plants.
That's exactly right, even if they don't care about it. But then the other piece of it is technology is really making it super easy for us to put all of this biodiversity at greater risk than ever before.
Yeah, technology is a menace for a lot of things. Let's go back to, for example, giving a message about conservation, maybe.
Yeah.
So technology can also work in your favor. In this specific case, definitely not.
So, well, in the case of the chainsaw, are you saying in the case of this particular podcast?
No,
because we've just failed at convincing people that they need to ask more questions about the spirits that they drink.
Asking the questions,
and
I
the
think
food
is,
that they eat
is the key.
Yeah, yeah. And being mindful. You know, it's so hard. I fell in love, as you know, with Dan Saladino's book, Eating to Extinction. And even as I felt like his message about diversifying our consumption patterns in order to save biodiversity, even as I felt like that was part of my soul and I want my ethos, this is who I want to be, it took me about 8 months to recognize that I was still buying that Cavendish banana. Right? Like, and I would go into Whole Foods and I would see, oh, I can get the little baby bananas or the red bananas. And yet, even as his book made me cry, even as it spoke to me, it's so hard to recognize the missteps in your own behavior. It's so hard to change the trajectory of what you're doing that if you aren't explicitly thinking about what you're doing, you're gonna fail.
And at this time of life, we have a lot of things going on. Our attention span is really tough. And then you like what you like. That's the other thing. You can maybe shape it, but be patient with yourself, Lou. Take it easy.
Okay, fair enough. Okay, Sergio, unless you've got something else for me on biodiversity and dangerous animals.
I'm good.
Okay, we're going to call it a wrap. I'll catch you next episode. Hasta pronto.
Adios.
You've been listening to Agave Road Trip, the critically acclaimed award-winning podcast that helps Gringex bartenders better understand agave, agave spirits, and rural Mexico. We're blessed with sound engineering by Roy Sierra and a theme song performed by Gabriel Oliveira and Marco Ricos. Sign up to become a road tripper and listen to more episodes at agaveroadtrip.com. If you enjoyed this podcast, please let us know. And if you hated it, well, I'm sure you'll let us know that too. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Agave Road Trip. Agave Road Trip is a production of 10 Angry Pit Bulls, Inc. Agave Road Trip is powered by Simplecast. Thank you for listening to Heritage Radio Network. Heritage Radio Network is food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. To subscribe to the Heritage Radio newsletter, enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with Heritage Radio Network on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find Heritage Radio Network at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization using the power of education
educational storytelling about food to build a more equitable, resilient food system. Heritage Radio Network couldn't do that without support from listeners like you. Become a part of the world's most innovative community today. Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the Heritage Radio Network family by becoming a member. To become a member of the Heritage Radio Network, click on the beating heart of our homepage. Heritage Radio Network can become addictive. Programming you hear on Heritage Radio Network might lead you to eat, drink, and listen to more programming on Heritage Radio Network. If you drink, please do not drink and drive. Drink responsibly. Drive responsibly. Eat responsibly, too. And listen to Heritage Radio Network responsibly. To listen to Heritage Radio Network responsibly, wear protective earbuds. While wearing protective earbuds, do not drive. Do not walk, either. Sit in a comfortable chair. If that comfortable chair has a hard seat, please remember to stretch every 30 minutes. If you stretch every 30 minutes, please stay within your defined stressing capacity. And consult a doctor who specializes in stretching. If you don't have a doctor, maybe Dr. Ryan Acock, the Cocktail MD, can help you out. Thanks for listening.
Agave Road Trip. Out.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Awaili, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.